We're now ready to begin the 27th chapter of Genesis. Before we go directly into this 27th chapter of Genesis, we'd like to note an interesting thing here, and that is that many Bible scholars and many Bible commentators actually look upon Jacob as a person who is one who doesn't have a good character. They wonder, how could God love Jacob when Jacob was so immoral as he was? They obviously seem to think that Jacob was a sly schemer, a liar, a deceiver, a supplanter, a man intent only on acquiring money by whatever means he could devise. They portray him as being shrewd, crafty, covetous, with no ethical scruples except those dictated by his own self-interest. And even realizing that God had an obligation to Abraham and Isaac to carry out his promise, they ask the question, why would God choose Jacob instead of Esau? Esau seems to be a much more admirable character, a strong, virile, outdoor man, surely much more suited to be the founding father and head of a new nation than a man like Jacob. But sad to say, such pictures of Jacob and Esau, such values and judgments placed upon Jacob and Esau by men and the Jews in general, as is outlined in what we just said about him, have caused many anti-Semitic thoughts to be had. It's caused a lot of persecution to be given against the Jews down through the centuries. And somehow even Christians have been caught up in the idea of feeling anti-Jewish on many occasions for reasons just like this, a misapplication of the facts about men like Jacob. As a matter of fact, many Bible teachers, many of those who head denominations, who outwardly would strongly deny that they're anti-Jewish, nevertheless, they have hidden feelings which come out on the subject when they're dealing with Jacob. And it should not be thought that when we defend Jacob, that we are condoning lying and deception, that we're not trying to condone anything that was done that was wrong. But we must realize very strongly that when we are applying the passage in the book of Genesis, that there is never a single instance in the Bible of criticism of Jacob. The only criticism that was given to Jacob was given by Esau and Laban, both of whom were really not very reliable witnesses at all. Every time God spoke to Jacob, it was in a message of blessing and promise, never one of rebuke or chastisement. And so if we're going to be faithful to what the Bible says, if we're going to be faithful in reflecting what the Bible says, we must be guided by what God had actually said and not by what we think he should have said. In Isaiah 55 and 8, remember, God said, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord." So it seems that God did have a favor toward Jacob and a reason to favor Jacob over Esau. And so we think that those who have these commonly expressed attitudes that are opposed to Jacob and look upon Jacob as an underhanded, scheming, sly type person are really in error. When we read in a popular Bible translation, the headings placed there by the author of that translation, such as the stolen blessing, and Jacob reaps the harvest of his evil years in the book of Genesis, we see here that the writer is actually pronouncing moral judgments of his own, which are not at all founded on the actual biblical statements concerning Jacob. God's judgment concerning Jacob is given in Genesis 30-28. There he says, "As a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed." That's what God says about Jacob, how God feels about Jacob. And we read in Malachi 1, verses 2 and 3, "Was not Esau Jacob's brother, saith the Lord? Yet I loved Jacob, and I hated Esau." God had a reason for what he did, and we cannot challenge or question God's reason. And so for us to place a judgment here on what God has approved of and what God has done puts us at odds with God, actually. We learned in Genesis chapter 15 that God had decided to establish the messianic line and the promises through Jacob rather than Esau even before the two boys were born. This decision was clearly made and given to Rebekah and Isaac, but Isaac, nevertheless, wanted to favor Esau anyway, resolving to give him both the birthright benefits and the patriarchal responsibilities and blessing associated with God's promise to Abraham. As the boys grew, their character soon proved that God's decision had been eminently wise. Jacob is described as being a plain man. This means literally a perfect or complete man. In Genesis 25:27, Esau, on the other hand, despised his birthright, Genesis 25:34. And in this story of Esau, when he was 40 years old, verses 34 and 35 of chapter 26, we just talked about that a few minutes ago, took to wife these two Hittite women, these two Canaanite women, which were actually a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. This action on the part of Esau further proves that Esau had a carnal character, a carnal nature. He knew well how cautious God had been in selecting a wife for his own father. When Isaac's wife was selected, there was much concern and much care and much effort put into the fact that they wanted to guard the integrity of the line of the promised seed. It had to be a woman who was proper for this. And certainly Esau's choice of these two Hittite women, these two Canaanite women, would not be proper to carry out the established line. If no other reason than that, he had disqualified himself. And no doubt also, knowing that God's will for the marriage relationship was monogamy, he compounded the insult to God and still took a second Hittite woman and had two wives. He seems to be absolutely unconcerned and gives no regard at all about God's promised blessing associated with the patriarchal line. He's not concerned about the kind of a woman that's going to be the mother of the children who will carry out the patriarchal line. Esau was 40 years old when he married these two women. So it was not a matter of him having youthful indiscretion. He was old enough to know what to do and what not to do. If he was ever going to be grounded in the truth and the right philosophy that should follow this line of the promised descent, he should have been well grounded in it by the age of 40. It was a deliberate choice, and it was certainly made against the counsel of his parents, as well as against God's will, as well as he knew. These wives, as we discussed, were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah, probably not only because they were daughters of Canaan, but also because Abraham had so carefully avoided taking one of the daughters of the Canaanites as a wife for Esau's father, but probably also because they were idolaters and ungodly in lifestyle as well. These women were not suited to be in the family of God. They no doubt still further alienated Esau from concern for God's promises and purposes, as well as his standards of holiness. So they would draw him away from being qualified and even being interested in wanting to carry out God's will. So as we enter chapter 27, we're going to see here that Isaac was highly inclined to want to give the blessing to Esau. He fully intended to give him the birthright. He wanted Esau to be the head of the promised line. And so we begin in verse 27, verse 1, and we'll read through verse 5. And it came to pass that when Isaac was old, and his eyes were dim, so that he could not see, he called Esau his eldest son, and said unto him, My son, and he said unto him, Behold, here am I. And he said, Behold, now I am old, I know not the day of my death. Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons, thy quiver, and thy bow, and go out to the field, and take me some venison, and make me savory meat such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die. And Rebekah heard when Isaac spake to Esau his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt for venison and to bring it. Here we see that Isaac calls Esau in, and he tells him what he wants to do. He says that he's old, he doesn't know how long he's going to live, so he wants to make his will before he dies. And so in order to do that, he wants Esau to go out and bring him some of this venison that he loves so well, and they would have a meal there, and this would be the agency through which they then would let Esau be blessed by Isaac and be given the birthright. Well, we're running out of time for this part of our study. Next time, Lord willing, we'll begin in this first part of the 27th chapter of Genesis. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.